morning, as you know, we looked at what it is to look and to try to keep this commandment from a positive side. And we looked at that we're to seek the welfare of others, and that we're to do that, first of all, by seeking the welfare of widows and orphans. The second, to seek the welfare of the poor. And then we want to look at a few passages where you're to take care of the stranger. Israel, though they were a theocracy and they had special privileges in many ways, but even when the Gentile or the stranger that came among them, they were to show love to them as well. Look in Exodus chapter 22. That's one thing that our nation was noted for from the very beginning. I believe, I've never been to Ellis Island, but I believe that on the Statue of Liberty is something carved to the effect of, give us your hungry and your poor and your tired and so on. And I'm thankful that we are a nation that welcomes all to come, provided that they come legally. Provided that they come legally. No one should go and be invited illegally, naturally. And so Israel was commanded to take care even of the strangers. Look in, as we said, Leviticus 22, verse 21. Thou shalt neither vex a stranger nor oppress him, for ye were strangers in the land of Egypt. Exodus 22:21. God reminds them that they were strangers in the land of Egypt and that they should not vex the stranger. Now make the application while we're looking at this. We want to look at it from another standpoint. We should not vex the ungodly, for we were ungodly before God delivered us from the bondage of sin. One of the most horrible and pitiful sights to me is to see individuals in bondage to sin. There is nothing any more pitiful than an individual being in bondage to sin. I was talking to the children, I believe it was this morning, not too long ago. I was talking to an individual that they told me, they said, well, you know, said, I don't really consider myself worldly. He said, I figure that I'm probably the closest thing to being an agnostic as I could be, and maybe not be an agnostic, but I don't consider myself worldly. And I said, what do you think, what do you consider to be worldly? And they went on to say somebody more like that, shooting drugs and living in what we would call gross sins and things of that nature. I said, well, no, that's just a wicked individual. I said, if you don't love the Lord and you're not following Him, you're worldly. You're worldly. But even saying that and talking about that and even discussing that with this individual, my heart went out to this individual for the fact that they were so in bondage to sin. And that's the way most people are. They compare themselves with other people around them, so they really think they're pretty good individuals. But they're to be pitied. They're to be pitied. They're not to be ridiculed. They're not to be looked down upon, because if it were not for the grace of God, we would be in the same state. Even worse. And I think that's something that a lot of times we say, but really, it has no meaning to us. We say it because it sounds good, and we say it because we know that it's true intellectually, but I wonder how much we know that in our hearts. I wonder how much we know that in our heart. I can tell you this much, that I believe that I do know in my heart, and that is that if God does not sustain me, I would deny Him. The Lord was denied by Judas. The Lord was denied by Peter. And the only difference between Peter and Judas is the grace of God. Judas went out and hanged himself. That's the repentance of the world. Peter went out and wept bitterly. But he did not go out and hang himself. And the only difference is that the Lord prayed for Peter and said, "When thou art converted, strengthen the brethren." And therefore we should realize that part of being honest, part of being honest and living an honest life and not the life of a thief, is that we do not vex the stranger, nor do we oppress the stranger. We do not vex sinners, nor do we oppress sinners, because we too were in the bondage of sin. I know that I was in the bondage of sin. I know that I enjoyed sin. I did not enjoy going to the house of God. I would use any excuse I could to get out of going to the house of God, especially when I got old enough to drive. I was not brought up in a very strict religious home. It was encouraged to go to church somewhat, but it was no big thing if we missed. And it didn't bother me if we missed. Didn't bother me at all. And sad to say, even after I think the Lord converted me, there for a little while, it really didn't bother me to miss a little bit, but it began to bother me to miss. As I went on and talked to this individual that I was speaking about, the individual talked about how that he figured most people really go to church because they're afraid of going to hell. And I said, well, if God really gets a hold of an individual, they'll go to church if there were no hell. And I believe that. A person who loves the Lord will go to the house of the Lord if there's not even a hell. It's not because of judgment. It's not because of what the church folks say. It's not because of what the preacher would say. People just love to go to the house of God if they love the Lord. A man who loves his wife, he wants to be around his wife not because of any punishments for not being there. A man who loves the Lord the same way. Of course, we read earlier verses 22 and 23 and 24. With reference to the widows and orphans this morning. Look also in Leviticus with reference to the stranger. God emphasized this. The Jew had no right to be prejudiced against the Gentile. And yet they are one of the most prejudiced, an Orthodox Jew is. In the Talmud, in the Babylonian Talmud, and I've read it. It is no disgrace for a Jew to deflower a Gentile girl. It is no disgrace for them. It's an honor for them to do so. At least that's what it was at one time. And also, they talk about Gentiles. They are geos. I believe that's the word, meaning we're cattle. It's just like we have no soul. But a Jew has no right according to the law of God. They don't claim to believe the Old New Testament, but they're supposed to believe the Old Testament. They have no right to have any animosity against a Gentile, against the stranger. We read it in Exodus. Now we're finding it in Leviticus. And by application, a Christian has no right to show animosity and hatred, especially in an unjust way toward, and we're not talking about hatred, but against sinners. Leviticus 19, verse 9, "And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of the field, neither shalt thou gather the gleanings of thy harvest. Thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, neither shalt thou gather every grape of thy vineyard. Thou shalt leave it for them that are poor and stranger. I am the Lord your God." In other words, if they had crop, or if they had a garden, they were not to pick it clean. They were to leave some for the stranger and those that were poor. Notice in this, there was no welfare society. The poor was given the opportunity to work for his food. It wasn't that you pick it and give it to him, but you leave it for him to gather it. And if you will remember, when Ruth followed Naomi out from Moab and came back to the land of Israel, that she was found to work among a just man, Boaz, and he allowed her to glean in his field. Though a Moabite was not to go into the temple of God till the 10th generation. But God had mercy on David, a grandson of a Moabite, was allowed to go into the temple of God. But God tells the Israelites, you be good, you be kind, you show charity to the stranger, to the stranger. And then again in Deuteronomy. Again in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 24. Verse 19 we will begin. When thou cuttest down thy harvest in thy field, and hast forgotten a sheaf in the field, thou shalt not go again to fetch it. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow, that the Lord thy God may bless thee in all the works of thy hand. When thou beatest thine olive tree, thou shalt not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the neighbor, for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. When thou gatherest the grapes of thy vineyard, thou shalt not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, for the fatherless, and for the widow. And thou shalt remember that thou wast a bondman in the land of Egypt. Therefore I command thee to do this thing. So here you see again that our Lord emphasized over and over and over again the importance of taking care of the stranger, not only the fatherless and the widow, but in these verses, the stranger was mentioned first. The stranger was mentioned first. And therefore, if there's anyone that should have mercy on a sinner in the bondage of sin, it should be a Christian. Christians do not have the right, though the Christians are to abstain from sin, we are to abstain from worldliness, we are to rebuke the works of darkness, and all of that, nevertheless, we are to show have pity on sinners. Now sometimes, as we've said before, even in our prayer, I believe, this morning, sometimes hard to know how to balance all of that. But we have to keep that proper balance. While if man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat, yet at the same time, there must be that softness of heart toward those that are poor, and even the stranger, that is a stranger to Christ. That is a stranger to Christ. May God give us a heart of wisdom and a heart of compassion to know how to speak to the ungodly and yet at the same time not be influenced by the ungodly practices. You don't go into the house of prostitution to witness. But if God brings one across your path, you may speak to her as the Lord did to the woman of Samaria. You say, well, how do you do all of that? Well, I don't know that I know how to do all of that. Ask God to give us wisdom to know how to do that. So that's seeking the welfare of others. Second thing that we're commanded to do is to protect the property of others. We are to protect the property of others that we not steal. While we're in Deuteronomy, turn back to the 22nd chapter. We are to protect the property of others. Verse 22, chapter 22, excuse me, Deuteronomy 22, verse 1. Thou shalt not see thy brother's ox or his sheep go astray and hide thyself from them. Thou shalt in any case bring them again unto thy brother. And if thy brother be not nigh unto thee, or if thou know not him not, then thou shalt bring it into thine own house, and it shall be with thee until thy brother seek after it, and thou shalt restore it to him again. In like manner shalt thou do with his ass, and so shalt thou do with his raiment, and with all lost things of thy brothers, which he hath lost, thou hast found, shalt thou do likewise, thou mayest not hide thyself. In other words, what do we find here? Somebody loses something and you find it, you're to give it back to them, but if you don't know whose it is, you can keep it until the individual comes and they ask you and say, did you find such and such a thing? And then you can say, yes, I did, this is yours, and give it back to them. You don't say, well, I don't know what you're talking about. You don't hide yourself from them. You are to always seek to find that which is the other person's. I emphasized this not long ago. I don't remember how many weeks ago. I'll tell something a little bit funny. Hannah was in the parking lot shortly after that, and she found a $1 million bill, some kind of play money. The first thing she did when she found it, wondered, who's this? So, you know, but seriously, when we do find something, we should try to return it to its owner. I think I told you about the family and I were blessed to be able to go to Gatlinburg one time, and we went to the museum, the aquarium there, and just as we were about to go in, on one of the side streets there were several $20 bills floating down the sidewalk, and I grabbed them up and looked around and saw no one and didn't know anybody around, and so the only thing I needed to do was stick them in my pocket. And so I did so, but kept looking around to see if anybody was there and that might have lost it. And you know, finders keepers is all right. Losers weepers, I don't know. I don't know if that part of it is good. But if someone said, hey, I lost several $20 bills. Did you happen to see them? I said, yes, I found three of them. And so here they are. And somebody said, well, I lost some money. You say, well, what kind of money did you lose? Because in this day and age, it's hard to know who knows whose is what. And let people claim anything. But you know, if you see a man, like I tell you about where I used to grow up, where I was raised out in the country. If we were driving down the road and we saw a man's cattle or something, a horse or a mule or something that was out of the pasture and in the road, well, we stopped to help put it back in the right place. And if there was a hole in the fence, we tried to patch the fence and let the man know about it. That was biblical. That's what God would have us to do. And the sad part about it is I live on almost a dead-end road, and we've gotten a lot of animals at our house that have been drop-offs. And sure would like to find those owners. But, so anyway, You've got to have that proper spirit. Even in Exodus, we find the same thing in Exodus 23 in verse 4. Isn't it amazing how wise God is? Exodus 23. If a person will read the Scriptures and believe the Word of God, he'll know how to live. Exodus 23 and verse 4. If thou meet thine enemy's ox or his ass going astray, thou shalt surely bring it back to him again. If thou seest the ass of him that hateth thee lying under his burden, and wouldest forbear to help him, thou shalt surely help him. Thou shalt not rest the judgment of thy poor in his cause, and so on. Not only with your brother, not only with your friend, not only with your stranger, but even your enemy. Even your enemy. Beloved, you know as well as I do, if somebody has done you a lot of hatred and a lot of evil and a lot of harm, and you see them in a bad way, you want to say, boy, they're getting theirs. But God says, you help them out. You help them out. That'll keep you from having such a horrible spirit. No wonder Paul wrote, I believe, no, but very well, Paul may have been thinking about this passage when he wrote in Romans 15, if thy enemy hunger, feed him. If thy enemy hunger, feed him. Beloved, we need to have that kind of spirit lest we have the heart of a thief. We are to have the love and care for one another. Next thing we ought to do in order to keep this commandment is to make restitution. To make restitution. In Exodus chapter 22. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it or sell it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep. Say restitution. You're to pay back. Here the man stole an ox and killed it. What did he do? He's to pay back five more oxen. And the same way with sheep, only it was four sheep. I remember along this same line, I wish I had thought to have put this down as one of the verses with reference to this. If a man did not pay his tithe when he ought to, and he wanted to use the tithe for something else, God said he could do so, provided he pay, if I'm not mistaken, pay back five times. In other words, if a man didn't give the tithe, he wanted to keep it for himself, and if his tithe was $10, then he had to give $50. And usually if a man doesn't give as the Lord would have, he'll see to it that he gets it. But here, we're to show restitution. We're to pay back. We're to pay back. If our court system would make thieves pay back, work some way to pay back what they have stolen, there'd be a whole lot better than just shutting them up and doing nothing with them. While we're here in Exodus, let's look at Exodus 22. Exodus 22, beginning at verse 2. We read 21, verse 1. Now we want to read verses 2 through 15. If a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall no blood be shed for him. In other words, if a man breaks into your house and you kill him, that's all you need to do. You don't even have to make a sacrifice for him. If the sun be risen upon him, there shall be blood shed for him, for he shall make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. In other words, he becomes a slave because he's a thief. This is biblical slavery. If the theft be certainly found in his hand alive, whether it be ox or ass or sheep, he shall restore double. If a man shall cause a field or a vineyard to be eaten, and shall put in his beast, and shall feed in another man's field, of the best of his own field, and of the best of his own vineyard, shall he make restitution. In other words, if his livestock gets out and eats in another man's field, he's to take the best of his field and give to him. If fire break out and catch in thorns, so that the stacks of corn, or the standing corn, or the field be consumed therewith, he that kindled the fire shall make restitution. You know, we have these folks that want to shed fire, or want to make fires and cause fires. And here recently in Israel was one of the largest fires that they'd ever had in history. Burned several people's homes and several thousand acres and so on. And what happened? A little boy playing with fire, if I remember correctly, let get out of hand. Well, he should have some way to make restitution. In this case, it may be the parents need to make the restitution because he's under their authority. Verse 7, if a man shall deliver unto his neighbor money or stuff to keep, and it be stolen out of the man's house, if the thief be found, let him pay double. If the thief be not found, then the master of the house shall be brought unto the judge to see whether he have put his hand unto his neighbor's goods. For all manner of trespass, whether it be for ox, for ass, for sheep, for raiment, for any manner of lost thing, which another challenges to be his, or cause both parties, shall come before the judge, and whom the judges shall condemn, he shall pay double unto his neighbor. In other words, if somebody just borrows something from you, and you leave it laying out so it can be stolen easily, you're responsible. You see, we're to take care of everybody else's property. Even children ought to realize that they're to help take care of their own siblings' properties. And we're to take care of everybody's property, lest we have a heart of a thief. Taking care of property and taking care of what God has given to you and taking care of what God has given to others keeps you from having the heart of a thief. Because you're destroying other people's property when you're not trying to take care of it. I was raised that you take care of what you're given. Everything from the socks on your shoes to the best pair of clothes that you have. You take care of it. Try to keep it. Lest you have the heart of a thief. And have no care for anything. You're stealing from yourself and not showing appreciation for what God has given as well. Verse 10. If a man deliver unto his neighbor an ass or an ox or a sheep or any beast to keep and it die or be hurt or driven away, no man seeing it, then shall an oath of the Lord be between them both, that he hath not put his hand unto his neighbor's goods, and the owner of it shall accept thereof, and he shall not make it good. And if it be stolen from him, he shall make restitution unto the owner thereof. If it be torn in pieces, then let him bring it for witness, and he shall not make good that which was torn. In other words, what you find here, if he's negligent, he has to pay. If he's not negligent, then that's another thing. Verse 14, and if a man borrow aught of his neighbor, and it be hurt or die, the owner thereof, being not with it, he shall surely make it good. But if the owner thereof be with it, he shall not make it good. It is an hired thing. It came in for his hire. In other words, if I was living on a farm and I hired Brother Jeff and his ox to come and plow for me, and the ox die, and Brother Jeff is driving the ox, then I don't have to pay for it. But if Brother Jeff is not driving the ox and one of my hired hands is driving the ox and the ox dies, then I have to pay for it. That's the difference. In other words, if he's coming and brings his hammer to work on my house and He breaks his hammer, he has to pay for his hammer. But if I break his hammer, I have to pay for the hammer. You see that? Would that this society knew that. All right? Verse 16. That's enough right there. Verse 16. Look in Luke chapter 19. I'll show you what happens to a man when God converts him. Luke chapter 19. Verse 8. And Zacchaeus stood and said unto the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I have taken anything from any man by false accusation, I restore him fourfold. When a tax collector starts doing that, you've got something. God's got his heart. And when God has a man's heart, he has his pocketbook. So you make restitution. Make restitution. Also, as we've already said, we say again, you consider the property of others. You not only protect the property of others, you even consider it. Look in Deuteronomy 23. Probably should have had you look at that before we went back to the New Testament. Deuteronomy 23, verse 24. When thou comest into thy neighbor's vineyard, then thou mayest eat grapes, thy fill, at thine own pleasure. But thou shalt not put any in thy vessel. And when thou comest into the standing corn of thy neighbor, then thou mayest pluck the ears of thine hand, with thine hand, but thou shalt not move a sickle unto thy neighbor's standing corn. In other words, I'll go back to the watermelon. That was a story this morning. A man could go in a man's watermelon patch, and he might sit down and sit there and eat a watermelon. And then he'd go on his way, but he wanted to take one with him. Or if he's visiting and see an apple on a tree, he could reach up and get an apple and eat it. And if he wanted to eat two or three, he could eat two or three. But he wouldn't put one in his pocket. So you're to consider the property of others. You're to consider the property of others. There'd probably be less food wasted if we were to follow that rule here in the day in which we live. Now in closing, I want to look at two points of how to avoid stealing. How to avoid stealing. First is to live within your calling. Ephesians chapter 4. To live within your calling. What do I mean by that? Well, let's read the verse first of all. Excuse me. Ephesians 4. Verse 28, we read this morning. There's another passage that comes to mind. If I can find it, I'll turn to it here after I read this. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. I want to see if I can find something quickly in the book of Corinthians. I'm not sure. I think it's in 2 Corinthians. Well, I can't put my eye on it quickly, but you can take your Strong's and look it up where it says that every man should abide in his own calling. Now, what do I mean by that? Let's say that you are raised in a home and you're poor. You don't have much income. And you cannot provide or have what your neighbors have. Instead of going in debt on credit cards and everything else so that you can keep up with the Joneses or whoever your neighbors are, you're not to do that. You are to abide in the calling where God has called you. And if you don't have the money to buy a brand new car, I wouldn't recommend that anyway, as a general rule, because they depreciate too quickly. If you can buy a good used one, you'll be far better off financially. But let's say your neighbor buys a new car every year, and you want to do that too, and you want to keep up with them, and you try to buy a new car every year, and you don't have the money to do so. You're dishonoring God, and you're not abiding in the calling wherewith God has called you. Parents sometimes fail in this when they try to make sure their children have what all the other children that their children are fellowshipping with, that they have everything the same. And so they go into debt to make sure they have all the same gadgets that everybody else has. And we parents that have soft hearts need to be reminded that we are to abide in the calling wherewith we have been called. The second thing is to be content with what God has given. Be content. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5, it says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as you have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. So that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me." Beloved, we need to be content with what we have. Be content with what we have. Be content with what we have. For the Lord said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Now you know the song, How Firm a Foundation. In that last verse when it says, I'll never, no, never, no, never depart, has five nevers in a row. Well, according to English grammar, when you have one never against another never, or one negative against another negative, it cancels out. That's the reason you're not supposed to say, I ain't got no. And when you say that, that means you've got something. But in Hebrew or in Greek, that's not the case. When you put a negative with a negative, it makes it stronger. And in the Hebrew, in the Greek, in that verse, there are five negatives in a row. The songwriter of 161 evidently knew Hebrews 13 here, and Hebrews 13:5. It's, I'll never leave thee, no, never, ever forsake thee. Something like that is the Greek and the intensity of that verse. Now, all of us here have gone through trials and afflictions at various times, and we thought God had forsaken us. Sometimes some of us may have gotten down pretty low financially and thought maybe we were going to shame the cause of Christ. But if we were to accumulate all of our ages here, Sister Ruth and I could do pretty good. And Sister Mary's not far behind. I know they don't mind me talking about their age, so I'd say that. But in all seriousness, if all of us were to add our ages together, you find out how many years God has not forsaken. All of us together. God means it. He'll never leave you nor forsake you. Many times we think that He's left us. Many times it seems as if God is on the backside of Pluto and has forgotten us. When in reality, we know that He's still there. Therefore, we need to be content with what God has given us. Paul learned this, as we read in our scripture reading, Philippians chapter 4. Paul didn't have this at the beginning, but he learned it. Brother Jeff brought this out not long ago to you. Notice what he said. Philippians 4:11. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am, therewith to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things am I instructed both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Paul knew how to handle himself if he had a lot of money. He didn't let it burn in his pocket and spend it foolishly. And Paul knew how to handle himself when he didn't have anything. And many times he didn't. In one of his lists, he said many times he was hungry. Hungry. We don't know what it is to be hungry. Sometimes we may do a little fasting and wonder if we're going to make it through half the day, much less the whole day. We don't know what it is to be hungry. We don't know what it is to be hungry. Not really hungry. I pray we don't. Paul knew what it was to be hungry. And he said, I have learned to be content. Paul was in the Mamertine prison when he wrote the book of Philippians, as normally believed. Some don't always believe that. Brother Jeff brought that out the other day in his message. See, I did listen. But it's believed pretty much that he was in the Mamertine prison, thought he was going to get his head cut off. I believe he got out of prison and got it cut off later, not at this time. But he didn't know but what he was going to get his head cut off. And he said, I'm content. I'm content. I'd probably be a basket case. I know I would without the Lord. Paul said, I'm content. I tell you, there's nothing like contentment. I believe I've tasted contentment a few times. I don't know that I can fully say that I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. But if we can learn to live in the calling wherein God has put us, in other words, this is where we are now, this is where God has put us, we are to live in that to His honor and to His glory. And to be content in that calling where He has put us. That will keep us to have a good and an honest heart before God and before one another. Let us pray.